All right, let's go to the phones. On line 97 is Senator Martha McSally. She can't believe I have 97 phone lines.
Well, we're getting exactly. we're getting
Don't
big.
Exaggerate, Chris.
Fake news, I tell him.
I'm calling from the cloakroom right off the Senate.
Look at you. I like that. I'm glad to see you guys working again. I like that.
Yeah, absolutely. It's my third trip back and forth in the last 3 weeks. Actually, if you count Air Force One, it was my fourth trip.
Oh,
that
look
was
at
cool.
You, look at you name dropping your Air Force One trips. Now, we had Steve Moore on. I told him I was going to tell you on last hour, and he wanted me to tell you that he loved the McSally Blackburn COVID-19 China bill. Can you?
Yeah.
He wanted me to give you kudos. Can you explain to everyone the summary of that bill in a minute
Absolutely.
Or less?
Absolutely. So China is responsible for unleashing this pandemic, their cover-up, their lies, their continued disinformation campaign. And so this bill allows a very narrow exception to the Foreign Sovereign Immunities Act so that individuals who have been harmed by the coronavirus, either by losing a loved one or losing their job, could actually sue China. And there's precedent for this. We've had successful suits with similar exceptions for state sponsors of terrorists by Iran, where they've been able to get judgments in court and then actually get the resources. So it's a very narrow exception. We've already had a number of lawsuits out there, state of Missouri and some other class actions, I think up to about a dozen, but they would likely not succeed unless we have this narrow exception to this Sovereign Immunities Act that would allow China to be sued. It's one of the many tools we can use to hold them accountable.
Any other countries doing similar stuff?
You know, I think some other countries are now waking up and realizing we need especially European countries to wake up and stop, you know, being in bed with China, so to speak, and looking to see that China is on a path and has been for several decades to try and replace America as a world leader. And we need them to join with us in order to hold China accountable for this virus, but also their other malevolent activity. So I'm not sure if other countries have actually sued. I've seen maybe some in the news, but we're trying to focus this on what Americans, American states, and American citizens can do.
So last time I saw you in person, we were doing the Lincoln Day dinner together.
Yes.
And you got on the microphone and you said to everyone, look, we know we need to do certain things to flatten the curve.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have flattened the curve.
Yep.
So what's happened since then? Not for you. I'm not saying this is a person. This is just in what's going on in this country.
Yeah.
What has happened since then that now it's not flattened the curve and the mission's changed? What
yeah.
In your opinion, why are we at where we're at now?
Well, we knew very little about this virus because of China's lies and cover up. So we had to learn ourselves. We didn't have a good understanding of how it spread and how quickly it spread and what the death rate, how it impact young and old people. And so we were asked to do our part. The president asked, you know, to do our part to flatten the curve so that we protect the vulnerable, don't overwhelm the healthcare system, support our frontline healthcare heroes. And we've done that. Now it's time. It's not an either or. I think this is now being politicized, and we're seeing it with these draconian measures in some of these states where they're now, they have been overreaching in their power. Look, I trust Arizonans and I trust Americans with the information we have and the guidance that's out there. It's not an either or. You either safely return to work or you're saving lives. We can do both. We need to protect the vulnerable, the elderly, those in congregate settings who are sick. We need to ensure when we focus our testing, it's on nursing homes and assisted living and independent living and hospitals to protect the vulnerable, but allow people to work. There's people up and down my street who were living paycheck to paycheck who all of a sudden had no paycheck. We provided some relief. They need to safely be able to return to work. I've already got my hair cut and got a pedicure 2 weekends ago, went out to restaurants last weekend in Tucson. I can safely do that. My friend who's a leukemia survivor, she has to make different choices. But this is what America and Arizona is all about.
Now, tell me about the CARES Act. Now that we're, you know, several weeks after the CARES Act, and there's we've talked about on the show the perverse incentives of the extra $600 a week kicker, the cash bonuses for hospitals to say COVID-19 and put them on ventilators. But where are we at hindsight, Martha, on this CARES Act, on what was good and the PPP thing? What's give me a little hindsight breakdown on this.
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, at the time, it was all hands on deck to be able to quickly get relief out there in order to save people's jobs and save small businesses. And anytime you have speed and federal government in the same sentence, it's usually, you know, usually not associated with it. And so speed was the most important thing to get that support out there, to get immediate relief out to people. And the PPP is a perfect example. We could have had everybody line up single file with a government agency, and we'd be sitting here for years processing this. Or we could use the infrastructure that was out there with credit unions and banks and financial institutions to start processing these. Now, when you choose speed, there's going to be imperfection. It's not going to be perfect. We've seen that. But we were also asking people, as we're dealing with this unprecedented challenge, to operate in good faith and operate with selflessness. And just like you don't need to fight over toilet paper at Costco if you don't need any more, you shouldn't be getting PPP if it's not what you need, if you have access to other capital. I've been really fighting for these mom-and-pop shops, these self-employed independent contractors, one- and two-person small family businesses. In the second tranche of PPP, many of them got access. I think the average loan at this point is like $85,000. The unemployment piece, look, we were concerned about that. We wanted to plus it up. It was an imperfect way to do it. Technically speaking, each state was unable to adapt to having an amendment, which I voted for, that said you can get unemployment up until what you were making, but not more than that. But the technical challenges of executing that would have slowed it down. But the underlying law still applies. And I talk to small businesses all the time. If you can't quit your job and get on unemployment, that's not allowed. If you've been offered your job back, you can't say, no, I'd rather be on unemployment. That needs to be reported to DES, and they will not qualify for unemployment if that happens. Going forward, we're working with the Trump administration. What else can we do to incentivize work and incentivize these small businesses being able to exist as we ramp back up again and get back to the economy, the best economy we had before this happened? We've got to get back there.
So basically, when it comes to, because I know Secretary Mnuchin said that he was, that the people who say they don't want to come back to work are going to get kicked off the federal unemployment. So that really has to, if the employer, has to report it. If the employer doesn't report it, then we're going to have chaos in the system.
Yeah, the employer has to report it. You're not allowed to quit your job and get unemployment. You're not allowed to refuse a job and stay on unemployment. So that has to be reported. That's all managed at the state level. But that's underlying labor law, and we need employers. I talked to someone last week who had somebody say, I don't want to come back to work. And they said, well, okay, I'm going to report you. So, look, we've got to move forward to get people back to work. I think most Arizonans do want to work. There's a lot of challenges in the retail service sector, restaurants. We've got to provide more opportunities for people to be able to get back to work quickly and incentivize that work as well and ensure these small businesses survive so that those jobs exist.
So we have this, our Speaker of the House is, you know, they had this another $3 trillion worth of stuff. I assume once it gets over to your place, that would be killed anyway.
So did you see it says the word cannabis 68 times? It says that more than it says the word jobs. Look, we're having serious conversations with the administration about what more can be done with deregulation, with tax incentives to bring jobs home from China, to bring manufacturing home, you know, to be able to get the economy going in afterburner again to meet some of the challenges that we have here. While we also invest in treatments and cures and vaccines, which, by the way, has been unprecedented, the level of innovation and investment that's happened, record time in some of these things. So we've got to do all of this, and you know, we're in serious discussions about what that's going to take to support communities and small businesses around Arizona and workers around Arizona. So let's just say the serious discussions are happening in other places.
So here's a, this is not a something I'm saying you would do from the senatorial point of view, but we're looking at, there's parts of America that the populace is screaming to get out and get back to work and do it in a safe mm-hmm. manner. Just putting on your public policy hat, not your senator hat. How does that get done better? You know what I mean? I mean, I know certain states have got, now governors are getting sued over some of these draconian orders.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah. Well, I think that those in some of those states we've seen, some are auditioning to be picked for, you know, Biden's vice presidential pick. I think they've overreached. And again, people were willing, with the guidance from the president, were willing to sacrifice in order to flatten the curve. But this, the overreach that we see happening in some of these states and the way they're going about it, I think that appropriately people are pushing back, and the courts are working through their process there. Look, people can come to Arizona, go out to dinner, go get your nails done, go get your hair done. I trust Arizonans to do this our way, where people can safely work, safely shop, learn best practices as we learn more about this virus. Yeah, they should vote with their feet, maybe.
And let's switch over to campaign, because this early ballots are going out in, I don't know, 51 days or something like that for a primary. Mark Kelly, real quick, he has a little bit of a China situation himself. Just came out in Real Clear Politics. What's going on with that young man?
Yeah, he does a China problem. Look, I'm standing up to China. I want to hold China accountable. I've never trusted a communist in my life. And now China is actually threatening me personally and to meddle in our election. Meanwhile, Mark Kelly has not just, like, the Democrats have weakness in China in general, but he has got specific problems where they've got Chinese companies that are affiliated with the Chinese Communist Party that are invested into businesses that he's co-founder of, Worldview. You guys are familiar with that in Tucson. This same company is responsible for censoring individuals trying to speak out during the coronavirus. He also, if you haven't seen the video, as he was peddling pyramid scheme vitamins over in China, came out on stage on a motorcycle with a Chinese flag on the back.
Hold on. Mark Kelly?
Did you not see that yet?
No.
Yes.
On a motorcycle,
we'll get to the video.
Doing
yes.
vitamins?
Peddling, yes. Look, he has shown that, he is just willing to, for his second career, make a buck no matter what it looks like, no matter who he's associated with. And I think that's going to be a major factor in this campaign. Who's going to stand up to China will be a factor for President Trump against Biden, but it's going to be a significant factor in our race as to who you want to be your senator and who's going to be in the Senate majority.
I have a lot of listeners that have emailed me today, and I got to ask the question, are you willing to do a primary debate?
We're focused on beating Mark Kelly. That's the importance of this election, and it's all hands on deck to make sure that Chuck Schumer's not in charge.
So my question is, and you didn't do a primary debate 2 years ago, and now you don't want to do one now. Why? What's the problem with that? I understand about Mark Kelly, but what's the problem with doing a primary
debate?
We're focused
on the general election. We've got President Trump's full endorsement. We're all hands on deck in order to beat Mark Kelly.
All right, Martha. Well, thanks for the time as always, and we'll catch you soon.
You guys take care.
U.S. Senator Martha McSally. The question was asked, people. So 8:49 in the morning, you are on Wake Up Tucson, 10:30 The Voice, local news and talk.